We're going to talk about, over the, about the next 4 or 5 weeks, about our spiritual giants and the giants that we face. 1 Samuel chapter 17, we're going to look at verses 4 through 11, and we're just going to kind of skip around there. It's on page 250 if you have the little Bibles there in front of you. Page 250 in those. Here we go, starting in verse 4. Then Goliath, a Philistine champion from Gath, came out of the Philistine ranks to face the forces of Israel. He was over 9 feet tall. He wore a bronze helmet, and his bronze coat of mail weighed 125 pounds. He also wore bronze leg armor, and he carried a bronze javelin on his shoulder. The shaft of his spear was as heavy and thick as a weaver's beam, tipped with an iron spearhead that weighed 15 pounds. His armor-bearer walked ahead of him, carrying a shield. Goliath stood and shouted a taunt across to the Israelites. "Why are all you coming out to fight?" he called. "I am the Philistine champion, but you are only the servants of Saul. Choose one man to come down here and fight me. If he kills me, then we will be your slaves. But if I kill him, you will be our slaves. I defy the armies of Israel today. Send me a man who will fight me." When Saul and the Israelites heard this, they were terrified and deeply shaken. Now skip down to verse 16. For 40 days, every morning and every evening, the Philistine champion strutted in front of the Israelite army. One day, Jesse said to David, "Take this basket of roasted grain and these 10 loaves of bread and carry them quickly to your brothers, and give them these 10 cuts of cheese to their captain. See how your brothers are getting along and bring back a report on how they are doing." Now skip down to verse 24. This is in reference to Goliath. David has taken the things from his father to his brothers, and so he's watching all this going on. In verse 24, Goliath comes out, says the same thing he usually does, and it says, "As soon as the Israelite army saw him, they began to run away in fright. 'Have you seen the giant?' the men asked. 'He comes out each day to defy Israel. The king has offered a huge reward to anyone who kills him. He will give that man one of his daughters for a wife, and the man's entire family will be exempted from paying taxes.'" Now then skip down to verse 32. David watches all this, and here's what he says in verse 32. He goes before Saul, and he says, "Don't worry about this Philistine," David told Saul. "I'll go fight him." "Don't be ridiculous," Saul replied. "There's no way you can fight this Philistine and possibly win. You're only a boy, and he's been a man of war since his youth." But David persisted. "I have been taking care of my father's sheep and goats," he said. "When a lion or bear comes to steal a lamb from the flock, I go after it with a club and rescue the lamb from its mouth. If the animal turns on me, I catch it by the jaw and club it to death. I've done this to both lions and bears, and I'll do it to this pagan Philistine too, for he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the claws of the lion and the bear will rescue me from this Philistine." Saul finally consented. "All right, go ahead," he said, "and may the Lord be with you." Then Saul gave David his own armor and a bronze helmet and a coat of mail. David put it on, strapped the sword over it, and took a step or two to see what it was like, for he had never worn such things before. "I can't go in these," he protested to Saul. "I'm not used to them." So David took them off again. He picked up 5 smooth stones from a stream and put them in his shepherd's bag. Then, armed only with his shepherd's staff and sling, he started across the valley to fight the Philistine. Goliath walked out toward David with his shield bearer running ahead of him, sneering in contempt at this ruddy-faced boy. "Am I a dog?" he roared at David, "that you come at me with a stick?" And he cursed David by the names of his gods. "Come over here, and I'll give your flesh to the birds and wild animals," Goliath yelled. David replied to the Philistine, "You come to me with sword, spear, and javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord. Come to you in the name of the Lord of heaven's armies, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. Today the Lord will conquer you, and I will kill you and cut off your head. And then I will give the dead bodies of your men to the birds and wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. And everyone assembled here will know that the Lord rescues his people, but not with sword and spear. This is the Lord's battle, and he will give you to us." As Goliath moved closer to attack, David quickly ran out to meet him. Reaching into his shepherd's bag and taking out a stone, he hurled it with his sling and hit the Philistine in the forehead. The stone sank in, and Goliath stumbled and fell face down on the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine with only a sling and a stone, for he had no sword. Then David ran over and pulled Goliath's sword from its sheath. David used it to kill him and to cut off his head. When the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they turned and ran. You know, it's easy for me as I approach the Bible to read a story like this and say, wow, look at what David did, and then totally not see that I'm called to be a David. You know, as the band was singing this song, you know, the voice of truth, you know, that there's these voices in our heads that we can accomplish something, and then there's always this voice that tells you that you can't, that you're not good enough, that you're ill-equipped, that if you were just a little bit better, you'd be able to conquer your giants. And I don't know what your giants are. Every one of us have different ones. Some of us have a same one or a similar one, but a lot of times it's radically different. And it's easy for us to look at somebody else that maybe has an issue or has a problem, and it's easy for us to judge them and say, well, I don't know what the deal is. I don't struggle with that. They ought to just be able to deal with it. But if we were really honest and if we were really authentic, we would say we've got our own giant. And we've probably not just got our own giant, we've got our own giants. And it will be struggle. And that if we could lift up the curtain, if we could lift up the veil of our life where we kind of hide what struggles that we have, we know that people around us might be horrified at the things that we struggle with. And so we conceal it and we act like it's not there. You know where David started that day? I think it's so cool as to how David started that day. He was really the harpist, the personal harpist, okay? Like as in a harp that you play, a musical instrument. He was the personal harpist for the king. And he was a boy. And he was a shepherd. And he was the least of his family. And his dad looked at him and said, hey, go see how your brothers who are fighting in this war are doing. David's not even old enough to fight in the war. He's just taking care of a bunch of sheep. And then when Saul has troubled days, I guess if you want to call it the migraine of all migraines, they call for David and David comes and plays a harp. Not the most likely that you would choose on this day. As a matter of fact, probably the least likely. And here's David, this boy that's just taking care of sheep. Have you ever watched what a shepherd does? It's not riveting. You're not going to see it on the Discovery Channel, okay? It's not even an hour program. It's like 10 minutes. Here's what they do. They watch sheep, and they sit usually up on an elevated area, and they watch the sheep graze. And they sit there, and they watch the sheep graze. And they sit there and they watch the sheep graze. And their job really is they need to protect the sheep from any animal, which, you know, could come at any moment. But not every day and not every week does that happen. And so they sit there and they watch the sheep eat grass. Pretty boring. Not exactly the training ground for going and fighting battles, right? With a bunch of sheep. Have you ever heard of anybody getting sheep bit? You ever heard anybody? Man, you want to hear about the time that the sheep took my finger off? I mean, you've never heard that story before, have you? Because it doesn't happen. Because sheep are very docile animals. But they have to be protected. They have to be led. They have to be shown, hey, here's where grass is. Here's where water is. They're pretty dumb. And that's what David's job is. And then all of a sudden, when the real big day occurs, they go, hey, Saul's having a really bad day. You need to go play your harp for him. That's who he is. Ill-equipped, not the guy that you would think of that's going to fight this battle. And that's not where it ends up, though. Let's look at a few things here. Why the fear? Why are the Israelites so afraid of this 9-foot-tall guy? Actually, he was 9 feet 9 inches tall, okay? He's a big dude. Why are they so afraid of this guy? Well, here's what you need to know. When Joshua, now this is, you know, several generations before David and all these guys that are living at this time, Joshua is the one that goes into the promised land. You remember how they're supposed to get rid of all the people around there, and this is their land, this is where they're supposed to live. But there's 3 groups of people that Joshua and all of the armies of Israel did not defeat. One of them was from Ashdod. One of the groups was from Gaza, and the other was from Gath. What is Goliath? He is a Philistine from Gath. Guess what's going on through these guys' minds and in their hearts? My great-grandfather fought his great-grandfather. My grandfather fought his grandfather. My father fought his father. And now I'm fighting. You ever felt like that there's giants in your family that your great-grandfather fought and your grandfather fought and you watched your father fight? Or maybe it's on your mom's side. Maybe it's an issue of workaholic. You know, you're a workaholic and you look back and you go, oh man, this is what my dad fought against. And this is what his dad fought against. Maybe it's an issue of drunkenness, you know, just out of control. And you look back and you go, man, look at this. And when you look back, you realize that maybe it's not so much that everybody was drunk necessarily, but they were out of control in different areas of their life, and this is the way that they handled it. Because here's what you need to know. A lot of times our giants are microcosms of what's really there. Sometimes we look at the symptom and we think that's the issue. No, the symptom reveals problems. Like when I go to the doctor and I've got like the flu or something like that, I really am not interested in just getting rid of the headaches and chills. What do I want rid of? The entire flu, right? Jason's a perfect example as he battles cancer here. He doesn't want just rid of the cough that he had and stuff like that. I mean, that'd be great if that's all that it was. What does he want rid of? He wants rid of the cancer, you know? And that's the goal. And sometimes we look at kind of the symptoms rather than the inner problem. And God's called us to be giant killers in our life because each one of us are going to face him and each one of us is going to have to make a decision as to what we're going to do. You know, on that day, and for those 40 days, I should say, when Goliath would come out morning and evening and strut his stuff, don't you sometimes feel like that with your giant? That when you wake up in the morning, there's your giant. And when you go to bed at night, there's your giant. And he's just strutting his stuff. You'll never beat me. You'll never beat that addiction. You'll never beat that worry. You'll never beat that pessimism. You'll never beat that drunkenness. It's just constant. And it's like you've got a personal Goliath that just waits for you to wake up in the morning and says, you'll never beat me. That's what Goliath was doing morning and evening, coming out taunting. Hey, send somebody out. And everybody's like, whoa, I don't think so. You can almost see all these Israelites every morning getting ready for battle. And they're, you know, cheering and getting everything ready. And then Goliath shouts out and says, send me down one man. And everybody's like, send him down, you know, send that guy down. Send somebody else. I'm not going down there. That guy will kill me. No way. You know what is so interesting about this passage with David and with the Israelites? The entire Israelite army only talked about Goliath, and they never talked about God. David talks about God on 9 different occasions, and he only talks about Goliath twice. And in those 2 times, he is taunting and heckling the giant. It's not a compliment. It's not a, oh my goodness, what am I going to do type of thing. Both times it was, who is this pagan Philistine that he thinks he can defy the armies of the living God? Now, you know that the Israelites have to be looking around going, where are the armies of the living God? Because we're not seeing them. Because we're not them. It's not that David doesn't see the giant. It's just that he sees God more. And maybe that's what you need to take away from this morning, that as you battle your giants with whatever that it is, and you can fill in the blank because I can't list them all out this morning as to what they could possibly be, but you know what your giant or giants are, that the question is, do you see your giants more than you see God? Or do you see God more than you see your giants? See, it wasn't that David turned a blind eye. He never said, well, giant, what giant? He wasn't being an idiot. He recognized there was a giant down there. But here's what he knew. God has always helped me with these other problems. He can help me with this one. And in your spiritual journey, as you begin to walk with Christ, as you begin to walk with God, whether you're 1 minute into your walk with Christ or you're 1 year or, you know, 10 years or 20 years or whatever it may be, here's what you always have to take with you. Your past victories are an indicator of future victories. They may be smaller in scope at the time, or as you look back, but at the time they were huge, weren't they? Isn't it amazing when we look back and we've had faith to conquer something that then we kind of belittle it like, oh, it really wasn't that big deal after all? true that it wasn't as big a deal as what we made it, but it was a big deal at the time. And then the next giant that comes along, look what David went through. He said, hey, when I've ever been out protecting the sheep and a lion came up, if he didn't turn loose of the lamb and he turned on me, I killed him. You can either let go of the lamb and walk away calmly, or we're going to do some fighting. And David draws on that experience and says, hey, just like God was with me with the lion. And then he starts telling Saul, hey, Saul, there was these times that bears were trying to get after him. And I told them, if you don't let go of that lamb, I'm going to have to kill you. And he begins to draw off of that faith. And he goes, same God, just a different day. To me, what strikes me so much is that when David woke up that morning, he was a harpist, an artist, if you will, and a shepherd boy. That's not where it ended. He also took, if you will, a happy meal to his brothers. He didn't wake up that morning looking for a giant, but the giant was there. And I don't know about you, I'm usually not looking for the giant. I kind of want to skirt around him. You know, I want to let me just go around that. But you know what God's going to do? He's going to place you in positions to face the giant. And you're going to wake up on a normal day. You know, I'm just trying to be a harpist for Jesus. I'm just trying to be a nice guy and take care of. And God's going to send you on a small, small task of taking somebody a happy meal. And there's your giant. And you can do like what the rest of everybody else does, and that was, well, you know, I don't really want to mess with this giant. I'm not quite sure how this is going to turn out, and I think I'm just going to kind of hang out over here for a little while and let somebody else fight the giant. Or you can say, you know, God's provided me in life with things, and nothing's consumed me, and I believe that God's going to provide a way through this thing, and I'm going to face my giant head on. You know, a lot of times what I want to do is I just want to retreat. You know, I want to go and hide. I want somebody else to fight the battle. But God calls us into fighting the battle. I was talking to you earlier about things that kind of are sometimes passed down through generations, and lack of self-control or anger or depression or, you know, darkness or negativity or whatever that it might be that's kind of passed down sometimes through families. It was pointed out to me this last week, and as I kind of reflected on how are these things kind of passed down, we were at the doctor again with Sherry and the baby, and we were having to go over there again, and we were visiting with the ultrasound technician. You know that they know you really well when they look at your wife and they go, we really like your new haircut. You know you've been there a lot, okay, when they say that to your wife. And we were standing there at the counter, we were just kind of visiting about this's and that's's, and the one nurse, we were talking about her child, and they said, oh yeah, it was so funny the other day. She came in and she was just like, my 3-year-old has gotten into this foot stomping thing. And every time you ask him to do something, I think his name is Ryan. Ryan, I need you to do this. Hit, stomp his foot. No. And not just no, stomp the foot and then no. And every time stomping the foot. And the whole office looked at her and said, that's what you do. She goes, I do not. And right when she did it, she realized. They go, every time you get upset about something, you come in, you go, I can't believe that. And I looked at her and I said, we do come about things sometimes by honestly. You know, we get it honestly sometimes from the people that we're around. We don't even realize it. And I look back on that, you know, just as simple as the whole stomping thing. Where did Ryan learn that? Ryan learned it from his mom, and she had no idea she was even doing it. Ryan, one of these days, won't even know why he does that and will say to his friends, I don't do that. And they'll go, yes, you do. God sometimes shows us in some humorous ways some giants and some things that we do that we wouldn't even otherwise know anything about. God's called us to be giant killers. So how does David do it? How does David decide, hey, this is who I'm going to be? Here's some things that I wrote down. David brings up God. You know, and he says, hey, I don't care what kind of giant I'm facing. I don't care what it is. God is the one who's going to get me through this. I don't know how, but God's going to get me through this. Second thing is this. David really has no strategy. Have you noticed that when they ask him, hey, what are you going to do? And he's just like, man, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to take him on. They even try to dress him up and, you know, with Saul's equipment. And he realizes, I can't go in this. It's a great spiritual point. You can't go by what somebody else has used to kill their giant. It might work, but David looks around and he goes, I can't fight in these. I've never fought this way before. You have to fight your giant the way that God equips you. You may find out some key things from somebody else on how they've dealt with some things in their life, but ultimately, it's what God's going to equip you with. And he's going to equip you with something that fits you, not a one-size-fits-all type of thing. It's a great spiritual point in there. And then David goes on. He brings up God 9 times. He only brings up Goliath 2 times. And both times he taunts him. You know? It's amazing. Here's this boy. He's the only one brave enough to go down there and fight. And he takes off straight for Goliath. And I love that it says that Goliath starts to make a move as to what he's going to do. And it says, and David ran. He didn't go, oh, wait, what am I going to do? I'm going to be a reactive mode. No, he was proactive. He went after it. I remember one of the fears that I had growing up is heights. I've still got it to a certain degree. I've gotten over some of it, but I still have got it. Anybody else like heights just bother you like nobody's business? Man, heights really get me. And I remember we had a swimming pool that had the high dive, you know, and man, if you were really brave, you know, one of these days and you went off the high dive, I was like the last kid in the neighborhood to go off the high dive. I couldn't do it. I'd always go for the low one. You know, I'd be like, oh, you're on the low one. I'm like, I like it down here. It's my favorite. You know, you make up stuff as a kid to get by, you know, and try to slough it off. And I'll never forget the first time that I tried to go up on the high dive. There was always a line of kids for that. You know, you could always go off the low one. I'm like 9 or 10 years old. I climb up there to the top. Man, the whole way up, man, I can feel my hands sweating and, you know, and everything else. Mouth is drying out. I know. It just feels like the whole pool is watching you, you know. I get out there towards the edge and, you know, you're kind of bouncing on the thing like I'm really doing this, you know. And I'm so not doing this. And I look down at that water and it seems like hundreds of feet down. It's only like 10 feet, but still, you know, it's hundreds of feet down. And I remember turning around and looking at this line of kids up on the ladder, and I go, I don't feel so good. I think I'm going to throw up. Man, I slinked down off that thing. I never forgot it. Took me a while to ever get my courage back up again to even try it, you know. But I remember my freshman year of college, that's always the greatest time in life, you know. Nothing like upperclassmen making you feel like nothing. Because you are, and even though you try to act like you're somebody. And I remember we had to go through freshman ROTC. We were the last university in the entire nation that required ROTC for all incoming freshman males. Guess what one of their things is? Because we're doing survival training. This is one of the reasons why I love to watch survival shows now, is because I can usually figure out some things that maybe that they're going to do just because of the survival training that we went through. Not only do you have to go off the platform, it's a 10-meter platform, okay? Not only do you have to do that, you have to do it in full soldier uniform because you have to jump off into the water, and then you have to take off your pants and pull it around you and use it as a flotation device with no help, with all of those clothes on you. And you know what clothes do when you get them wet. Then you got all this military gear on you. And I was like, that sounds like a skip day to me. And I remember I didn't go that day. Fake being sick, you know. I wasn't the only one, by the way. You remember what it's like in your freshman year, you know, certain fears that you don't want to try to do. I was like, man. I remember the captain coming up to me and he said, hey, man, we missed you today. I was like, yeah, man, I was feeling a little under weather. You know how it is, you know. And he goes, you don't get a passing grade if you don't go off the 10-meter. You know, no way. And I was like, oh, man, am I going to do this? I had to schedule an appointment with the captain, with the sergeant to be there all by yourself, just the three of you. And I had to climb up on the 10-meter platform. I was just like, well, Jesus, it was good to know you, write your dear mom letter, And I just jumped off, and I was like, well, I may struggle, but at least these two guys should be able to jump in and save little old me, because the captain was 6'5", he had to be able to save little old me. And I remember struggling in the water to try to, because what you had to do was you had to take your pants off, and then because they were so wet, you're supposed to throw them over your head as quickly as possible with this part of it over your head, and then that traps water inside of there after you tie it all off. And I was like, man, this isn't going to happen. And I struggled in the water for like 20 minutes, finally able to conquer it. But I'm going to tell you something. After that day, man, I felt like $1 million. I felt like, dude, if I can do this, what else can I do? And then there was the day that they said, okay, we're going to be rappelling 100 feet. Now remember, I've still got the heights problem, I'm like, wow, but if I can do that, off the 10-meter, maybe I can do the rappelling. I remember how scared I was, and they lean you out over the side, which is not a fun experience. And they're like, let go of the rope. And I'm like, the rope is my friend. I'm not letting go of the rope. And I remember when you finally started sliding down, you finally started doing that. You know, what I learned from that experience was that sometimes there's some physical things that you have to get through. Sometimes there's emotional, spiritual, whatever it might be. But God calls us to be giant killers, and we can't just stay in that comfort zone. And there are those opposing voices like what was in that song, but the voice of truth tells us a different story. The voice of truth tells us, don't be afraid. The voice of truth tells us, you are a giant killer. You know, you can focus on God and your giants tumble, or you can focus on your giants and you'll always stumble. It's the way that it always goes. Is it easy? No, it's not easy. You know, one of the interesting things to me is I've always wondered, why did David pick up 5 stones? If he was so confident in God, why 5 stones? We don't really know exactly why he did that. Maybe he knew, well, one time I had a bear and it took 5, or I don't know what he was thinking, but he took 5 stones. The Bible clearly records a certain number. One of the things that as you read later on in Scripture, and I don't know if David knew this, and I don't know if it was, kind of heading in that direction or whatever else, but one thing Scripture tells us later on is that Goliath had 4 brothers. And I don't know if that's why he did that or not, but I think that there's some truth within that, that David knew there's other giants to come. You don't just, conquer Goliath and that's it. But I wrote down a couple of things here that I hope sticks in your mind as we kind of close this morning. That morning, David woke up as a shepherd boy. That evening, he was the hero of an entire nation. That morning, he woke up as a harpist. That evening, he was known as the giant killer. You've got giants in your life that morning and evening strut their stuff, say, you're not getting past me. You've got giants that maybe have been handed down generation to generation, and you probably know which giants those are. And you think, well, I won't ever get past this. But which voice are you listening to? And maybe even most importantly, are you talking about the giant 9 to 2 times? Or are you talking about God 9 to 2? You know what I usually do with my giants? 100 to maybe 1 of God. And what God is trying to present to us and to pull us in the direction of is this. You've got what it takes. You've got everything that you need. Remember the past victories because they point to future victories. God's going to be with you in those, like what he's going to be in this. You're going to wake up feeling like, man, I'm so immature in the faith. I don't know enough, and I don't know what to really do. But rely on God. Because in the morning, you're going to wake up as just kind of a shepherd boy or a shepherd girl, feel totally unequipped, doesn't even know that you're headed to face a giant. God's going to send you on a simple task. It's just a happy meal task. And all of a sudden, the giant's in front of you. And what are you going to do? You're going to be like the rest of the Israelite army? or are you going to be like David? And I want to choose to be like David. It's not going to be easy. There's going to be many battles ahead. David didn't just face this giant and it was all over with. He faced a whole bunch of more things in life. But God was with him on that day. And God, the same God of David, is your God. He hadn't changed. He's not doing things differently. The same God of David is your God, and he wants to help you with your giants. Let's bow in prayer this morning. Lord, we just thank you. I think each of us in this room probably have more than one giant, but we probably got the big one. We've got the one that always beats us, that we never beat. And so, Lord, I just pray this morning that maybe the first step for many of us in this room is that we've got to believe that you're going to help us conquer that giant. And maybe we've got to start listening to your voice more than we listen to that voice. And Lord, for some in this room, there's a giant that morning and evening struts his stuff in front of these people and says, "You're not getting past here. You are nothing." And God, I just pray right now that all of us, myself included, will realize that David didn't need a ton of strategy. He didn't need a ton of stuff. He just took what he knew worked. And that was some smooth stones and a slingshot and a shepherd's staff. And God, I pray that the story that you write about us, as you wrote about David, is that we quickly ran towards our giant. So, Father, I pray this morning that you will give these people strength, that you'll give them courage. You'll give me strength, that you'll give me courage, that as I face my giants and as they face their giants, that we will realize that that last verse that we read is so important, and that is, on that day, the Israelite army followed David and defeated the Philistines. Father, that our story would encourage others, that our story would be a hope of, wow, if David could do that, maybe I can face my giant, just like the Israelites realized on that day. And God, that we would look back and realize that because David, as a shepherd boy and as a harpist, the least likely to be picked, could face his giant and win, that maybe I could too. So, Father, we just pray right now for strength, for courage. Lord, that you would help us to face our giant and to take our giant head on and conquer that giant. I just pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen. My prayer is that you'll conquer your giants, that you'll take them head on. We're going to reflect this morning as we sing a song. I'm just going to ask you to remain seated where you are. If you're new to us, do us a big favor. Fill out that commitment or that communication card. Maybe if you've got a giant in your life that you're really struggling with and you want me to pray with you about, I'll be more than happy to do that. And you want me to get with you sometime, just check that box that said, "I'd like to do coffee or lunch with a pastor." I'll get a hold of you and be more than happy to pray with you about that. Maybe share with you some insights that maybe I have. At the very least, we can pray. We can seek God. But let's just kind of reflect this morning as we sing together.